Hi, this is Marlena Lieber welcoming you to Blind Spot. Blind Spot is a series of programs heard this time each week on ACB Radio where we talk no-tech, low-tech kinds of things. If you've got an idea for something you'd like to hear on Blind Spot, why not drop me an email? My email address is Marlena, that's M-A-R-L-A-I-N-A, at acbradio.org. Hello, and welcome to Blind Spot. This is Marlena Lieberg speaking. I am so excited to bring you this week's program. Every week since the beginning of Blind Spot, you have heard me say at the end of the program, thanks to Chris Bell for making the music happen. My guest this week on Blind Spot is, in fact, Chris Bell. And Chris Bell, thanks for making the music happen.
Well, thank you for having me.
It's so nice that folks have heard your music, and at least at the end of my show, and I suspect in some other places too, and now it's so nice for folks to be able to hear the voice of the man behind the music. But what I really asked Chris to join us to talk about this week, in addition to his music, is another, I guess, should we say, venture?
That
I only just learned about. So I will be learning along with everyone else, kind of what this is all about. Chris does vinyl and tape restoration. What the heck is that, Chris?
Well, that's when you take analog recordings, usually off of cassettes or tapes. They're usually out of print or older material because, you know, a lot of things people can get on CDs, but a lot of times people have old albums and think that they can. That's when you remaster them in a digital form. Usually, most people want audio CDs, and sometimes you can do a straight copy, or you can do some processing and clean the noise and the crackles and pops off the album. But that's basically the process.
And so I've got a tape that I've had for 30 years, and I want to put it on a CD. That's something that you're able to do?
Yes, ma'am. I can do that.
Now, how long does it take? How many hours of work, for instance? Let's say I have a C60 tape.
Okay, well, depending on the format, what I mean is, whether it's individual tracks or whether it's a straight live recording that you want just as is, you know, a lot of that depends on the preferences of the customers. But say if it was like a recording of an album with like 10 tracks, and if I had to cut the tracks apart, which you have to do that for an audio CD, otherwise it would be just one track. You couldn't pitch your forward and backward button and go track one, track two, track three, etc. You have to cut the tracks apart, and then you have to get your levels right. So you're talking a minimum of, I'm going to say, 2.5 to 3 hours of work.
Wow, just for my little 30-minute tape or 60-minute tape.
Yeah, by the time you record the thing and cut the tracks apart, it can take that long. Sometimes it can go a little faster, but it's not quite like hitting your dubbing cassette deck and putting a tape in one and putting a tape in the other. There's a little more involved, generally speaking.
Now, what if my tape is muffled and kind of, you know the sounds that you used to get and you still get if you stay up late enough and watch old enough TV where people sound like they're talking in paper bags and there's Rice Krispies crackling and popping all around them? And can you clean something like that up too?
Well, there's a lot you can do. You can do a lot of things with equalization and there's noise reduction software, which I use. You can't do miracles, but you can do quite a bit. I mean, you can take a recording, which is, especially like with vinyl, you can take a recording that's got a lot of scratches and pops. And if it'll play, now sometimes there's a trick to like making a record play without skipping and jumping. But if the transport's in good shape, now if the tape is in poor shape as far as the transport, the mechanism of the tape rides on, then it's kind of, you're kind of out of luck. But but if the tape is basically sound, but if it's just a slightly worn recording or whatever, yes, you can indeed make it sound much better than the original. But it's the proverbial, you can't get something that's not there. In other words, if there's just no treble in the recording at all, if you try to boost the treble up too much, you're going to boost the noise. But yeah, you've got a good amount of things that you can do, and you can make it sound better, generally speaking.
Wow. Well, you know, this kind of makes me think about some of the old 78s. Have you worked with old 78s?
You know, I had some of those when I was a kid, but I currently don't have anything that will play 78s. I'm pretty well dealing with vinyl and cassettes, and I would love to get my hands on a reel-to-reel machine, but I don't have at present. I have a very good turntable, which the studio in town doesn't even have a turntable. So that makes me... I work with them closely, by the way, but it's cassettes and 33 and 45 vinyl record, pretty much what I'm set up to deal with.
So then, if I still had my 45s that meant so much to me as a teeny bopper, you might be able to take some of those 45s and clean them up and get them onto a CD for me or a tape.
Yeah, I could take either one, your 45s or your tapes, and I could put them on a CD. I'm also equipped to do MP3s. If you wanted a lot of material on one CD, I could do that. But most people seem to prefer audio CDs, and they can play them in their car, you know, or out in the backyard when you're barbecuing, et cetera,
yeah,
in the jam box.
Yeah. Wow, what a fascinating field. How did you ever get into this? I mean, you know, I guess I've known that people do this. I guess inherently I've known that this could be done, but I've never known anyone who actually does it. What got you started down this road?
Well, ever since I was a little kid, I've enjoyed playing with tape recorders and radios and anything that made sound. You know how blind people are. We like sound. Yeah. And I guess it's been a gradual process. You know, it's an offshoot of having been a musician, both a live performer and nowadays more in the studio end of things. I've taken an interest in restoring my own collection of vinyl, which I have lots of these dusty old records sitting around, and the technology has gotten to the point to where the average person can afford it, but there's still, you know, a lot of people try to do this, and I'm not discouraging anybody from trying to do this themselves, but then they run into a lot of snags, because with the recording software and the process involved, and if you go on the PC audio list, you can see, how do I do this, how do I do that? So it's like, you know, this stuff is something that someone that's dedicated and, you know, who wants to do can do. But there are, I'm wanting to kind of do this for people who say don't have a lot of time but have, you know, favorite recordings and things. But it's been a gradual learning process like anything else. I've just played around with it, and I've talked to people that were knowledgeable in the field and knew what they were doing, and have read a lot, and there's nothing to beat your own ears, you know, when something sounds right, and
yeah.
if you play with enough tools and use your ears enough and spend enough time with it, then you're even a rockhead like myself is going to learn something eventually.
Oh, a rockhead like yourself, yeah. Well, I think that's true, and I think that the way I look at the service that you are now doing is that, you know, I could pull my own tooth too, but I'd much rather go to the dentist and have it done correctly. And so I think that it's a fascinating profession that you've chosen, and that's one of the reasons that I certainly wanted to bring you onto Blind Spot and kind of highlight that, and not even getting into the technical end of how you do it, because, you know, we're the low-tech, no-tech show. But the fact that you do it is what I find most fascinating. What's the most unique or interesting thing that you've actually restored for you or someone else?
Well, there was a tape, a cassette tape, that had recordings of children's stories that had been taped off the radio and off records. And in other words, it came from a lot of different sound sources of varying quality, and the levels were different. Like, some of them were... See, nowadays, when recordings are made, they use compressors and everything's big and bright and right in your face. But back then, they had pretty good engineers, but they just couldn't, like, sometimes if something had narration in it, it'd be down low. And usually, and, you know, I have different services I offer depending on the time or whatever, but I will go through a recording with a fine-tooth comb and make sure all the different parts are, like, are understandable and at as close to the same level as I can get. And that's where the time-consuming factor comes in. But anyway, they had a bunch of interesting children's stories that just are not available anymore, like all the Little Black Sambo stories and Peter Rabbit. And you remember all those things?
Yeah.
They were cool. And,
they were.
And I'd recently restored that and put it on the CD, and that was funny. And I remember some Christmas albums I did, some of which was probably available on CD, but this lady had albums that had been sitting in her basement, and she just missed them. And so I did like 7 different albums of Christmas stuff, and that was, I mean, it was really neat to when she put them on and listened to them. It's like, oh, my favorite stuff. I have it here, and it's not. It's, I have it forever.
That's, you know, so neat. So it's kind of, I would imagine, what you do is a little bit similar to what a photographer does, maybe with restoring old film, or rather a videographer does, with restoring old film and kind of giving people the opportunity to have that chance again, to bring those memories back and just really kick back and be like, wow, I can't believe what I was doing when I used to listen to this. Or
Yeah,
and that's got to be a really cool thing.
And this is an area where studios don't usually mess with too much. For one thing, major studios tend to charge too much for what most people could pay to do anything like this, and it's very time-consuming. And they'd rather just do session work. So this is kind of like in between the cracks type stuff, you know?
Yeah.
That's more suited to an individual that's got time to putter around with stuff. Because you have to tinker with it a lot. It's not like a mass thing that you can just you know, throw in and do. You know, it takes time to listen to it, and that's where it's at.
And I think that certainly those of us who are blind, are most of us are pretty darn good listeners. And then having you as a musician and somebody who I happen to know personally is pretty picky about how something sounds. When we were doing the voice check before we started recording, Chris said, is it just the phone that makes it distorted? Or and, you know, 9 out of 10 people wouldn't even hear that over the phone from speakers that are sitting up close to my ceiling. And yet you heard that because you have got that trained ear. And I would imagine that that's just a huge part of having a good finished product is having the desire and also the trained ear.
Yeah, you have to be able to hear distortion. And there's, you know, with old recordings, especially ones in poor shape, there is an inherent amount of distortion already there that you really can't get rid of, because that was just the nature. Part of it's just the nature of old analog recordings. Like if you listen to stuff recorded in the 50s, if you were to get a mint record from then, just the low technology of that point, I mean, it's going to sound. I mean, they when some of these singers would overdrive a microphone or those old tube amps, et cetera, et cetera. It would just, that's just the way it sounds. But you can do a lot to minimize that. So
now, earlier you mentioned a word that I know what it is, and you know what it is, and maybe most folks do, but there may be some folks who don't. What's a compressor?
Okay, I didn't mean to get a what a compressor does is, if you whisper, then you know that's a low sound, but if you yell loud, that's like a louder sound. What a compressor will do will take the low point in a recording and the high point in a recording, like a vocal track, and put it closer together, where you still get the sense of it being louder and softer, but from an electronic standpoint, you know, the way it sounds, it's easier to listen to because it's more compact and tighter, and it's more level. Like when you listen to a radio station, like an FM broadcast, you know, sometimes they're going, "Hey, yeah," you know, or they're talking low, but you know, the volume never seems to vary that much, and it's right in your face. Otherwise, you'd be turning the volume up and down to catch this low part or catch that high part, and so a compressor just moves everything out and makes everything more the same level. That's the layman's description of a compressor.
So it sort of makes it kind of more as we hear normal conversation.
Right.
Huh.
And it can be, and most people don't realize, but when you listen to a recording of music, well, if it's like something like orchestral recordings and stuff, they're the purists, they try to use as little compression as possible. But if you listen to any rock or pop or country a recording, there's compression applied almost along every part of the recording, and that's why it sounds so smooth, and that's the one determining factor that determines a home garage band type recording from a professional job done is the compression.
The compression.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, Chris, if people want to get a hold of you to ask you more questions about your service, how can they do that?
Well, I have an email address and I have a phone number. Either one. My email is cbell, that's cbelle, at iGateways, that's iGateway.net. And my phone number is area code 573-335-5233.
If a person has, let's say, an album, a vinyl, that they want restored. They want the whole album restored. What ballpark figure are they looking at?
For a straight copy of an album with minimal editing, other than cutting the tracks and just making sure the levels are right,
$20.
$20. Yeah.
You can't beat that with a stick. Well, Chris, each week on Blind Spot, I conclude with a piece of music that I think is either appropriate to the interview or might be meaningful to the person being interviewed. And this week, I'm going to conclude with one of Chris Bell's pieces of music. If anyone is interested in purchasing your CD, can they do that through you?
You bet. You bet. Just call me up or drop me an email, and there is a website in progress where I'll have real audio clips and that kind of stuff. I just haven't had time to implement that yet, but that's in the works.
Would you give us your contact information one more time?
I sure will. The phone number is area code 573-335-5233, and the email address is cbell, that's C-B-E-L-L-E, at iGateway, that's I-G-A-T-E-W-A-Y, .net.
That's C-B-E-L-L-E at iGateway .net.
That's correct.
Thanks for joining us this week. And it's great to know now that you've, not only have we got your music, but we finally got your voice.
You have a wonderful show, Marlena. I love to listen to the people that come on. It's just captivating to get glimpses of other people and what they're doing.
Chris Bell, my friend, thank you so much for making the music happen.
Oh, Jesus. So slowly,
listening to Blind Spot on ACB Radio. Thanks to our technical people, Chris Bell, for making the music happen, and Jonathan Mosen for making the program possible. If you have any ideas for something you might like to hear on Blind Spot, drop me an email. It's Marlena, MARLAINA, @acbradio.org.